I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché.
Touché. This may be the most important touché since the last touché.
It's really a fun touché.
It's just unreal.
This is so fun,
Justin,
man.
I'm not sure where they're going with this.
David's grousing, and I'm smiling.
I feel like every single day there's nothing off limits. Saturdays, Sundays, we saw this was a tremendous start to the Trump administration from the inauguration.
It's like 7 days a week almost, as if that's a job.
Dave, talk about the inauguration. What were your thoughts on the speech and the pageantry and everything that
came out? As one who predicted Hillary to win.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that.
As one who predicted the candidate who forgot to campaign in Wisconsin to win, what are your insights about the event on Friday?
I very much appreciate your warmth and your sympathy, Chris.
As one
who predicted that Donald Trump would win 40 states.
Hey, I came a lot closer.
Yeah. So in any event, look, I think that Trump's speech, his inaugural address, I couldn't help but focus on the fact that he used Lincoln's Bible to swear himself in, or to be sworn in. And
he's not Napoleon on December 2nd, 1802.
Lincoln, with malice towards none and charity for all. And instead we got that unbelievable charity for none and malice for all. It was just an unbelievable, just another campaign speech. Everybody's been waiting for Donald Trump to grow into the presidency. I remember back last year when he said, oh, you just wait. I could be presidential. If I'm presidential, nobody's going to pay any attention to me.
Presidential you've ever seen.
Exactly. Dude, you're president.
Everybody says I'm great at being president.
You're president. You got to stop being a petty little teeny tiny man. He did it again today, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, Chris, so a lot of the backlash
Hold on. The news right now is that Pompeo got himself.
He's in.
Yeah. He got himself confirmed. What was that, Chris?
He got himself confirmed over at the United States
so
Senate.
But stay on
and
the inauguration.
Tillerson's going to go.
We'll go in order.
The inauguration was great. It was a vast success. Thank you.
Media backlash. Let's go
Media
there.
Backlash. The media, it's not media. I want to say, you're dealing with a multi-headed monster called the establishment. The media is just one, probably the most visible, prominent. I mean, Meryl Streep is one of the multi-heads, but you know what I'm saying? That Judd Ashley or Judd or whatever.
Apatow.
And this is where you start to sound crazy.
You got the celebrities, you got the media, right. You got the academy, you got all the think tanks, you got the office holders, and you got the custodians of right opinion, and they all say the status quo is fine, and people like Trump are idiotic, and the voters have said we don't care about the status quo, we want change, and Trump is our guy. So rough around the edges, you bet. No problem.
So I think that when Sean Spicer gets fired next week, Chris should take his place because he's just as good as obfuscating. Because the answer to your question about the inaugural and how was it? It was great. Move on. Nothing
Look,
to see here.
I believe I posted
it
my
was
view
the
on
most
that.
Poorly attended inaugural in recent memory. There were more than 2.5 times the number of people who marched the day after than marched the day of. And Donald Trump, who is the president, by the way, is such a petty little vindictive man. Right. He sent Sean Spicer out to lie to national television in what Kellyanne Conway called alternative facts. By the way, alternative facts, hashtag, we're going to ring that around your neck for the next 4 years.
We're not coming here to read the
That's
paper.
The leading from behind.
David, you don't have to
of
read.
2000
Thank you. Okay, we don't have to read the paper from this morning. I think that the speech was actually brilliant, and I think that the speech is going to stand the test of time. And I believe, actually, if you want to find a pretty good exegesis of the speech, go to the...
Exegesis, word of the day.
Go to the Saturday morning New York Times. They did a terrific job. I credit the Times. I actually thought there were 3 or 4 really good news articles in the Times on Saturday morning describing what was going on. And I have spent as much time on Twitter or some Facebook with David praising the folks who demonstrated and protested on Saturday. Long may they reign, and God bless them for it. And I hear the distinction between the anarchists who are lighting the cars on fire and the anti-Trump people or the pro-women people or whoever.
Well, that was Friday.
Friday and all this stuff. Right, right. But, you know, I think, and David says it's the least attended, maybe, maybe not. But the fact is, it was the most watched, because when you add up the TV and the online and YouTube and everything else. Yeah. The other thing I do want to say, I thought Spicer did extremely well today. I think it was a lousy day Saturday. I declared that on WGN television this morning to be a mulligan. You know, that's when you take your first shot on the golf course and you shank it and then you get to do it over. I think that was a mulligan. Who cares? None of this is important. What's important are regular people and how the economy's been strangled. And now they've got a guy in there who's meeting today with the trade unions. Did you see sheet metal, carpenters, plumbers, joiners, glazers, all the trades were in the White House today.
I want to talk about
specific
this.
Ideas about how to improve the economy. And also, who else were there? The corporate chieftains. So that's the kind of guy Trump is, because he builds 90-story buildings
but
with
Chris,
the trades.
Wouldn't you, I mean, and you'd be the first to say this, because we've talked about this on Touche. I mean, it is, you could say it's all the press and you could say it's all the left that want to talk about the inauguration results, but it was Donald Trump himself and Sean Spicer who brought this to the forefront.
How many times have I said three big problems with Trump? One is conflicts of interest.
Right.
One is impulse control. And I would say the third is details or facts. And David wants to make something out of alternative. You know what? If there are 10 facts about a given situation and the media is going to talk about four and Spicer's going to go out there and talk about four other facts out of the list of 10, those are alternative facts. I got news for David.
Oh, good grief. That is some serious spinning, my friend.
No, it's not.
Those are alternative facts.
Absolutely true.
No, they're not alternative facts. He was telling falsehoods on Saturday.
That's not true.
Kellyanne Conway was telling falsehoods on Sunday.
Can I say
and
that?
The fact that he went to the CIA, I mean, and this is what
this
Leon
is a
Panetta,
story that got totally
this is what
obscure.
Leon Panetta said. This is what the former head of the CIA said. This is what a whole bunch of career officers, retired career officers have said. They were stunned that Trump goes to the CIA, by the way, apparently with an entourage of 40 people, according to CBS News, of his own people. You know, those are the people in the front row who are the
no,
clapping
they were
and cheering.
Not one of the people. You see, this is the David is so bereft of policy success from 8 years of Obama. He's got to come up with the false
76
facts.
Months of continuous job growth. Ooh, boop. I lost one there. Yeah.
He has to come up with the false facts of the media, the mainstream media narrative. And the fact
deficit
is,
cut into a quarter. Go ahead. Keep going.
And the fact is that
you want to challenge me on facts of success? I can go there. Sorry, the fact. The alternative facts. Sorry. Give me your alternative facts. My alternative fact is I climbed Everest on Sunday. What's your alternative fact?
That's not an alternative fact because it's untrue, David.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll take a break. I want to come back. There's two big things. Today, like you said, we talked about the executive order of scrapping the TPP.
Scrap it, baby.
Trans-TTP.
We're out.
And also I want to talk about the Women's March on Saturday because that sent a message to the Trump administration about a lot of social issues that are concerned to many people in this country. We'll see if that was effective in getting his attention and possibly steering him towards different issues in the future. Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling, my guest tonight, Touche, stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling, it's Touche here Monday nights on The Download. We're talking national politics, lots to get through. We'll go quickly because it's been talked about a lot. The Women's March on Saturday brought out hundreds of thousands of people in cities across America, including here in Chicago. What does it mean? What is the message that's being sent to the Trump administration that so many people, I mean, came out in force all across America to protest?
First, I think I don't want to glance over this.
He said we're going fast.
Yeah, we're not. there were 4+ million people that protested around the country yesterday, plus at least another million around the world.
Largest in
U.S.
history?
This was the largest in U.S. history. It was a mammoth demonstration. It's more than 1% of the population came out on one day to tell our new president, don't screw with us.
I thought they were telling Hillary, we forgot to vote for you.
They did vote for Hillary.
Yeah, most of them did, I'm sure.
If those people voted for Hillary...
Yes. I'm sure there were some people there who voted for Jill Stein.
People who sat in their house and didn't come downtown and think that didn't vote for her.
No, I got to tell you, it was amazing. I mean, look, unfortunately, we had to, I had family obligations on Saturday morning. I couldn't protest. I felt badly, and my wife felt even worse because she really wanted to be there. But it was just an amazing gathering. I saw so many pictures from all around the country. And what they are saying, and look, what they're saying is, don't screw with us. The second thing they're saying is, we are going to be here, and we are going to try to hold you accountable. And I say try. President, the president in his cabinet did something astonishing. There are fewer women and minorities here than in almost 50 years. There's two women, one African American, not a single Latino in the entire. And so the angry white man won. There are none. None of those darn minorities and women in the cabinet.
Let me ask you this.
That was a Republicans, tour of Dave Lundy's inner intellect.
Does President Trump and the Republican Party, when they see this kind of mass protest, do they say, you know what, let's focus on the economy. Let's not focus on reproductive rights. Let's not focus on repealing Roe v. Wade. Let's focus on doing things that
we're elected. Too late, they did the gag rule today.
Hold on.
They do that all the time, though.
One of the first things they did was reinstate the Mexico City policy. They're vitally concerned with reproductive issues and the defense of the unborn. And you heard that absolutely front and center today at the briefing. And I think that the kind of diversity that David is saying he cares about was certainly shown to be absent from the protests when they found out that one of the groups that had signed up to participate as women who are concerned about Trump, they were invited to leave because their group happens to believe in pro-life stuff. So there isn't any intellectual diversity on that side. And
nonsense.
That's exactly why the protest, long may it wave, God bless every one of them. I know a lot of folks, my alumni page at my college, I can't believe how many of my fellow graduates of my year were actually out in force in Washington, blah, blah. Great stuff. Great stuff. It's what makes America so terrific. And it will have, I think, you know, I think it adds texture to the weekend. It's a counterpoint to the inauguration.
I think that you will see a political movement that comes out of that march. It was too big for it to just be for everyone to go back business as usual. All right, so let's talk more about what happened today.
Today.
The Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement is no longer, even though I don't think it ever was a thing because it didn't get through Congress. But
because Obama announced it without the requisite
support.
There you go
votes.
Again,
so here we go.
Chris.
Oh, so here's a question.
That's exactly right. He announced it without the votes, and he never,
so it never
fashioned
was a thing.
It. So he made this. A part of his pivot to Asia was we're going to have a new regime of trade comity, and we're going to have a trade relationship with Asia that's going to make everybody prosperous.
Right.
And he couldn't deliver. I mean, the fact is, this was a dead letter.
Who was stopping the agreement from going forward? I'm just trying to remember that.
The point
who's in control of the Senate that wouldn't allow the agreement to go forward, Chris?
If you're going to have trade.
You can't blame a guy for not getting an agreement through when you're the one stopping the agreement getting through.
If he is going to go out and say, he goes international and says, I'm getting you an agreement. And he hasn't lined up the votes back home. He's the one who looks a
fool. Once upon a time,
not
Republicans
the guys who were
forget
opposed.
About
Republicans
Obama.
Were
forget
institutionalists.
About
not
Come on,
anymore.
Let's talk Trump. What does he do now?
Trump
because what
is,
I've seen is
Trump
that the
believes
Chinese,
in bilateral trade agreements, not multilateral.
Okay.
And so his beef with the multilateral agreements is it gives every element in the multilateral group, whether it's
equal
Asian
footing, right?
or equal footing. And then
we shouldn't have equal footing with some
of
these
countries. And then it becomes a race to the bottom because the weakness of the weakest economy in that particular group ends up dictating the trade policy of that treaty. Mm-hmm. So his thing is, look, we're big. We're a big market. We're the greatest market on earth. And
so we're going one-to-one with these
people
guys.
Want access to our market, then we'll do one-on-one. And Theresa May is coming on Friday. And
do you run the risk of giving more power to a China who comes in and replaces America in this concept of a global economy?
Yes. It's not even a close call. This is
China is.
I don't agree with I don't agree with the left of my party that said trade agreements are bad. Trade agreements historically for the United States have generally been very good. They are confusing trade agreements with globalization. Globalization is here to stay. We have international flights. We have international ships. We goods and services are traveling around the world. You can't stop the wave of progress. But I just want to make one point about what Chris just said about it being a race to the bottom when you have bilateral, multilateral agreements. A race to the bottom is exactly what the Trump people are trying to do with the replacement for Obamacare by allowing you to have insurance sold across 50 state lines. This is exactly the argument Democrats have been making.
I'm going to have to go to Northwestern for the whipsaw on my neck.
No, this is the exact argument Democrats have been making, which is that if you allow Alabama to set the insurance policy, you're going to have the worst insurance possible.
Okay. Last point today, and this is a big one. It was a small thing, but the idea that the federal workforce or federal workers were
hacking.
I'm interested in this. I listened to Paul Ryan on Charlie Rose, and he talked about the unfair advantage that American businesses have when they're dealing with international business. They get taxed in the, by the country, taxed on the way out. That
it's
Trump
an unfair
wants to come,
disadvantage.
Yeah, disadvantage. They want the Trump administration
the
wants to take that away. Now, in my estimation, taking away revenue, that's essentially revenue to a lot of these, you know, to the federal government. What you're going to have to do is squeeze the government to make it more efficient or to limit expenses to make all that work. Is that what we're seeing here? Is it really less about I'm going to make the government work for you and more about I need to take that money and move it over here because we're taking money from taxes?
It's Grover Norquist, the conservative activist, had been saying literally for decades, we don't want to kill government. We want to make it small enough to drown it in a bathtub. This is why revenues have been, you know, they've been trying to squeeze the federal government. The fact is, to listen to them today, you'd think, oh, my God, the federal government under Obama exploded in size. The fact is, it didn't happen at all. It was the smallest growth of the federal government under Obama than any White House in modern history.
That's my point. But it feels like more when we see when we're going to cut in areas or gut the Energy Department, things of that
under
nature.
Under the rubric of respecting the taxpayer, I think what the federal government and what, you know, a high school district out in the west suburbs of the city of Chicago, what both of them owe their taxpayers is the statement that given our mission as constituted, right, we are delivering as efficiently as we possibly can. And we are constantly looking at what we're doing to make sure that we're being efficient. And if anybody in this world, and all of my Democrat friends agree with me when they're off the air about this, even maybe Dave Lundy, but if anybody out there thinks that the federal government under Bush or under Clinton or under Obama or under Bush or under Reagan is as efficient as American industry, or for that matter, you know, global players in German industry or global players in Japanese industry. If anybody thinks that HHS is as efficient as it possibly could be, then those people have got serious problems.
But I wonder, though, are we getting into the argument of the haves and the have-nots and the 1%? Because the companies that are going to get tax relief here to keep their companies here, the factories, they're not going to pay their fair share. So the question again becomes, What is this to somehow stimulate the economy?
Why do you state that as a – you're stating
because,
a conclusion
Paul
as
Ryan
a premise.
But Paul Ryan said is that, you know, you're going to have – you're going to what government wants to do, what President Trump wants to do is get rid of the taxes for companies so they'll stay in America and not leave. And so my question is, that's a revenue stream, isn't it?
Wait. We have to look at the – I would say two quick points. Number one is you've got to look at the economy as a whole and the international economy as a whole, and you've got to look at what are our terms of trade with the rest of the world and what are the terms of the rest of the world with us. And the truth is we have the highest corporate tax burden of all industrialized nations. Now, people might say, let's ratchet that down, let's ratchet that up, whatever it is. But you got to start with an understanding that it is the highest tax burden in the industrialized world. That's number one. OK. And then number two, if government were just to stay the size that it is and Trump is successful in growing the economy as he says he wants to, then the size of government relative to the economy is going to reduce.
Yeah. Last word, Dave Lundy.
Well, first of all, what Chris just said about the corporate burden is a distortion of the facts, because the reality is that most corporations like GE, for example, don't actually pay their taxes and don't actually pay their fair share. They pay a teeny, teeny, tiny compared to what you and I and everybody in this room pays. But that's a story for another day because we are out of time.
Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling, Touche Monday nights here on The Download. Thanks, guys.